Welcome. Thank you for watching this teaching video from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. Please check out our other videos and don't forget to like and subscribe. Our mission is to help people come to know Jesus better and love Him more every day. We believe this will not only help our own spiritual growth, but also help us better influence the community and the world for Christ. For more information about Oak Tree, please visit us at oaktreechurch.com. There you'll find past message series, online giving options, and more information about our discipleship process that we call The Path. Now, enjoy this message. We'd love to hear from you in the comments or the website contact form. Thank you.
A couple of weeks ago, it was July 4th weekend, you know, the big thing this year with the 250th anniversary of our country. And we sort of jokingly said there are three things we're not allowed to talk about in polite company, right? Politics, religion, and money. Well, 2 weeks ago we did politics. We're a church, so, you know, religion is always on the table. So that leaves, yay, money. So that's what we're doing today. You know what? Equal opportunity offender, basically, is how we are. Now, that scares people sometimes. When we say the church is going to talk about money, it's scary because some churches, it seems like that's all they talk about, right? Seems like, and it's not true, but it seems like it sometimes. You know, on when you YouTube or podcasts or whatever, you go to a church or some radios, it's like televangelists or whatever, it's like all they want to talk about is money. And it usually has to do with getting it from us into the church, their church, right? Right? On the other extreme are those churches that don't talk about money at all. None. You never hear about it. And with most things, the extremes are usually wrong, right? Okay? So don't want to talk about it all the time. Don't want to never bring it up. The ideal balance would be to talk about money as much as the Bible does. Right? Now, here at Oak Tree, we're on the low side of things. We don't talk about it very often. And so when it does come up, there's a reason for it. Our reason this time is because it is one of the parts of God's design for the church. And as we study the church this year, we would actually be wrong to not address money and giving, right? In the church, if we didn't address it. So here's where we're going to start. If you grew up in church or if you have a church background, probably one of the most common phrases you've heard when it comes to money in the church is tithes and offerings. Tithes and offerings. You got to have your tithes and offerings, right? The second most common, and this is more in some isolated groups. Maybe you haven't heard this one, maybe you have, but the idea of I have to pay my tithe or paying my tithe. Is anybody familiar with that phrase, paying your tithe? Okay, all right. Not everybody. It's sort of a area related thing. There have been some churches, or there are some churches that I have been where there are three boxes in front of the church. Right up here on the stage, or they would call it the altar. We don't have altars in churches, but right up here, and the pastor and his, you know, compadres here are up here, and there is a part of the service where everyone lines up to come up and put their money in the box while the pastor and the staff is watching. No envelopes are allowed, no online giving. You have to put it in where not everybody can see, but where the pastors are watching, okay? I've been there. I've seen this. The first box is your tithe, right? You come up this way. There's your tithes. Then your offerings. Then there's a third box. You're like, I'm only seeing two. Right? What's the third box for? The third box is for whatever the pastor wants the third box to be this week. It could be a special project. It could be you didn't put enough in the first two, so let's make sure we get some in the third one. It could be all sorts of, I've been there, I've seen this. I'm not making this up just for, you know, kicks. I've seen this. And if you don't put something in all three boxes, they're watching. They're watching. And you're going to get blacklisted and you're going to get harassed. There was a church just recently, I mentioned this a few weeks ago, but in the news maybe you saw, there was a church here in the States, there was a church where the pastors sent out a notice to the congregation members to make sure that they submit their W-2s into the church so that they can compare your W-2 with what you gave and make sure that it's at least a full 10%. Okay? I get ideas from everywhere. If you see an email from me this week, someone thought that was a good idea. Someone, now it could have been just the pastor who decided to do this on his own, but I think this was a larger church, and I think it probably went through multiple levels. This was signed off on by, I think, multiple people. Okay, make sure you submit your W-2s. We're going to compare. If you're not giving your full 10%, and we'll get to the 10, that's what a tithe means, right? Tithe means 10%, one tenth. Okay, and if you're not giving your full tenth to the church, there will be repercussions. There will be some backlash. Okay, you must pay your tithe. Now, that's not the same thing as what happened in some churches in our colonies. Early churches are known, there were, you know, when we had pews instead of chairs in these early churches, there were doors, the pews were boxed in. Have you seen this before? Have you heard this? The pews were boxed in and there were doors and there were locks on the little doors where you had to pay to get your preferred seating. Again, ideas. You have to pay to get your preferred seating, okay? And these were obviously not Baptists or non-denominational or independent, you know, whatever, because the most expensive seats were in the front, okay? Today, in a lot of churches, the most expensive seats would be in the back, right? And then the price gets cheaper as you move forward. Okay, but seriously, this is stuff that has happened in the church over the centuries, and some of it is happening right now, like today, 2026, in our country and around the world. This is stuff that is happening, okay? And it comes from a misunderstanding at best and a misapplication of some Old Testament teaching in the Bible, okay? So I think it's worth today taking a little bit of time looking at the history of this and then coming to say, so why do we give? Why should we give? You're not gonna get off the hook today. I'm not gonna say there's no giving at all, okay? Because there are reasons that we give. There are biblical reasons we should give to and through the church, okay? But that's not it. That's not why we give. So, all right, let's do some Old Testament. Let's do some history. Giving in the Old Testament. Basically, here's the idea. The tithe, the 10%, was a tax, and that is underlined. That's intentional. Most people don't think about it that way. But in the Old Testament, when God gave the law through Moses to the nation of Israel, the tithe was a tax, which is where the idea of paying your tithe fits in with that very nicely, doesn't it? Okay, you have to pay it. It's mandatory. It was mandatory under the Mosaic law. It was not voluntary. It was not optional. And in fact, when the people stopped paying their tithes, bad things happened. God said, I promise that I will bless you if you pay the full tithe. Malachi chapter 3 is probably the most well-known verse and most misused verse when it comes to this idea of tithing. Malachi chapter 3, the people, this is after the nation of Israel came back from Babylon and Persia. This is, they were rebuilding the temple, and the whole book of Malachi, which lines up with the book of Nehemiah, Nehemiah was governor, and he was wrestling with the same issues as governor that Malachi was wrestling with as a prophet, okay? And so we see a lot of overlap between these two books. Malachi, speaking for God, says, here are some things that you are not doing right. And Malachi has a great outline. God says, you're not doing this right. And the people respond, what do you mean we're not doing this right? How are we not doing this right? And God says, this is how you're not doing it right. And then he moves on to a new topic. You're not doing this right. How are we not doing this right? That's the whole book. Okay, that's the whole book of Malachi. All right. Short book, so it doesn't get really annoying, but that's just the whole book. We get to chapter 3, and God says, here's another one. Here's tithing. You aren't tithing anymore. You're not tithing anymore. And remember, I told you that if you tithe, I will bless you. And if you don't tithe, I will withhold my blessings, which will functionally become a curse on you and your land and your people. And so we come to chapter 3, verse 10, and God makes this promise to the nation of Israel, bring the entire tithe, not a 3%. Someone asked me once, so can I tithe 2%? Can my tithe be 2%? No, because that's not a tithe anymore, is it? Because tithe means 10%. You want to give 2%? Fine, give 2%, but you can't call it a tithe if it's only 2%, right? God said to Israel, bring the entire tithe into the storehouse so that there may be food in my temple. Now, that's really important the way that's phrased, and we'll come back to that. Test me in this manner, says the Lord of heaven's armies, or maybe your translation says Lord of hosts, to see if I will not open for you the windows of heaven and pour out blessing for you until there is no room for it all. If you do what I told you to do from the very beginning, I will make it so that you have an abundance, more than enough. And of course, this verse gets quoted a lot in churches that talk about money a lot. If you just keep, send your W-2s in, right? We're going to make sure, because if you don't do your full percent, God is not going to bless you. And if you do give your full percent, God is going to bless you. Okay, but I don't see God blessing me. Well, you probably don't have enough faith, right? So just keep giving more money and eventually God will bless you. It's like, well, he sure is blessing you a lot. It seems like the person who's collecting the money is getting a really good blessing, right? And the people who are giving the money, not so much all the time, right? But this is one of the verses that is so misused. And the reason is because of this. We want blessings. We want God's blessings. We want God's provision. And look, there's a promise. And, every promise in the whole book is for us, right? Well, we know, no, that's not true. God makes promises just like we do to individuals and to groups, and they don't, this is non-transferable, right? Non-transferable policies, okay? But look at that first part again. Bring the entire tithe into the storehouse, not the bank account. Bring the entire tithe into the storehouse so that there may be food. The tithe in the Old Testament, the tithes, were not about money. Now, we can read through the law and we can find that, yes, there are people who lived farther away from the temple. And so there's no way they're going to transport all of this stuff so they can convert it to money and then bring it to the temple so that the priests can buy what they needed. But the idea was not about money. Okay, the idea was food and animals. The tithe was an annual 10% of the crops harvested. Okay, so if you have a bad year, your tithe is going to be lower, right? That's fine. If somebody comes in and steals a bunch of stuff out of your field before you harvest, So basically, maybe you've heard this question. So should I tithe? I remember this from years and years ago. Should I tithe? You know where I'm going, don't you? Should I tithe on my gross or on my net? See, you're right there with me, right? Should I tithe on my gross or my net? And of course, the answer that every good pastor will say is the government takes its money out on the gross before you touch it because it knows it won't get it if it lets you have your money first, right? So you should tithe on your gross because that was actually your increase. That was how much you made, and so you tithe off of your gross income. Some people say, well, no, you tithe off of your net income because that's after all of your responsibilities, then you have to tithe. When you harvest your field, all right, we've got some vegetables out here because someone harvested our community garden, okay? When you go home this fall and you harvest your fields and you bring all your stuff in, 10% of that goes to the temple, okay? Just so you know, right? If you are not a farmer, if you are a rancher, this one's interesting. Every new animal that's born, it's a lamb, it's a kid, it's a veal. What's a veal called? Sorry. Well, cow, calf. There we go, calf. I knew there was a non-food term for it. So all I could do was veal. That's the only thing. No matter what your animals are, no matter what you are ranching, okay? God didn't get the first one. Isn't that interesting? God didn't get the first one. He said, count them as they are born, and the 10th one goes to the temple. He said, and you don't get to look to see if it's a good one or a bad one. You don't get to switch stuff around. If it's a really, really good one, it goes to the temple. If it's a weakling, it still goes to the temple because it's about the 10th one, regardless. Okay? With your animals, God didn't say, I'm going to take the first one. He said, every 10. So that's not gross or net. I mean, that's just like, that's, you know, it doesn't even fit into that ballgame, right? Okay? So why is it about crops? Why is it about animals that are born in the flock? Why is it not about money and whatever? Here's why. Where's my thing? Because the purpose of the tithe, and remember this is annual, okay? Now animals can be born throughout the year, so you're sort of keeping track, but generally speaking, your harvest is going to be once a year. There may be a little bit of an early harvest, and so you may do that, but generally, this is an annual thing. Every year, the tithe was meant to provide for the tribe of Levi. Here's why. Because when Israel came into her land and God had Joshua parcel out the sections, this is for the tribe of Simeon, this is for the tribe of Issachar, this is for the tribe of Judah, whatever, Levi did not get any land. They got no section because they were going to be so busy being priests and ministers. All the priests came from Levi, but not all Levites were priests. They were ministers either at the tent of meeting, the tabernacle, or later the temple, and they were spread out throughout the other tribes. And they could have houses, but they were not given any tribal land. Maybe they could have a little garden plot or whatever, but they were not given space to farm. They were not given space to ranch and to do herds and flocks and all that because they were too busy doing ministry on behalf of the nation. They were not allowed. It's not just that they didn't have the ability. They were not allowed. God forbade them from doing that. And he built into the law, into the nation's constitution, you as a nation will take care of them physically because they are taking care of you spiritually. That's the law of the land. And every year, your crops, your animals will be brought to the temple, brought to the place that where God is worshiped for the nation, and then distributed to the tribe of Levi. Here are a couple of passages that, since I'm guessing we don't spend a lot of time reading this stuff in Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy, thought I would bring some of this up. The end of Leviticus, chapter 27, verses 30 through 32. Any tithe of the land, from the grain of the land, from the fruit of trees, belongs to the Lord. It's holy to the Lord. If a man redeems part of his tithe, however, he must add one-fifth to it. So if you sell it because you're way far away and you can't transport it, so you sell it for money, then it's a 20% tax on top of your 10% tithe. Okay, it's an additional fee because the money is less, isn't this interesting? The money is less useful to the Levites than the food is. So if you're going to give money because prices fluctuate, we know all about that, because prices fluctuate. If you give them a lamb, it's a lamb. It is, right? If you give them money, it may or may not buy a lamb. So you have to add 20% to it, God said, if you're going to convert this to money. Okay? All the tithe of herds or flocks, everything which passes under the rod, the tenth one will be holy to the Lord. Numbers chapter, and these are much longer than, you know, you can keep reading. Numbers chapter 18. Numbers chapter 18, starting in verse 21. Numbers 18, starting in verse 21. See, I have given the Levites all the tithes in Israel for an inheritance, for their service that they perform, the service of the tent of meeting. No longer may the Israelites approach the tent of meeting, or else they will bear their sin and die. Now, this was in the worship structure. The Israelites were not allowed to do their own worship. They couldn't make their own. They brought their sacrifices, but the Levites were the ones who were in charge of the music and the worship leading, and the priests lit the candle or kept the candles lit and burned the incense and did the sacrifices, and all the stuff was linked to the tribe of Levi. And because of that, God said, all the tithes. The Israelites don't get to do this on their own. The Levites stand between the nation of Israel and God. But the Levites, verse 23, must perform the service. And they must bear their own iniquity because, I mean, they're sinful too, right? It will be a perpetual ordinance throughout your generations that among the Israelites, the Levites have no inheritance. They get nothing except what the nation provides for them through their tithes. So when the nation decides, oh, we can't trust God, we're rebuilding because of exile, we don't have a lot of crops yet, I have to provide for my own family, I can't trust that God will give me enough, they're not only starving themselves because they're bringing God's curse on them, they're starving the Levites. They're starving their brothers and their sisters in the land of Israel. They will receive no inheritance, but I have given to the Levites for an inheritance the tithes that are offered to the Lord as a raised offering. Notice that the money was not given, not money, the tithes were not given to the Levites. God says, listen, I need you to have the right attitude. The right attitude is that the tithe is given to God, the Lord. And the Lord has decided, here's what he's going to do with his tithes. He's going to give them to the tribe of Levi. The attitude was an attitude of worship. God, we are giving this to you. What you decide to do with it is up to you. It's yours. It's holy to the Lord. And God said, I'm going to give it to the Levites. That's why I said to them that they're not going to have an inheritance. Okay? So, each year, as they're bringing the stuff, there is a storehouse. This is where Malachi 3, verse 10 comes in. There's a storehouse. Where are all these crops going to be stored? In the storehouse. It's not a bank account down the street at the local bank because, you know, we wrote our check or gave our cash or gave online and it was direct deposited. There's no direct deposit of your wheat crop. Right? There's no direct deposit of your lamb or your calf or whatever that you're bringing. Okay, you have to physically bring it and show it and say, this is for the Lord. And the Levites accept it with gratitude. Okay? It's worship to give. What's interesting is that the Levites were also required to tithe. So when the Levites got their portion of the rest of the nation's work, the Levites, the whole tribe, was to give 10% to the high priest and his family. Okay? So God had it built into the law, into the constitution of the nation, that they were to worship him in this way. Now, one of the things that's interesting about this in Deuteronomy 14 is that at least once every year, and it's really vague here in Deuteronomy chapter 14. There's no specific feast. I was looking, I searched all over the place, and no one seems to know if this was an exact time or if people could do it periodically throughout the year. But at some point through the year, when the people would come to, once the temple was built, it would have been Jerusalem, but wherever the place where God was worshiped and the priests were serving, families would come together and they'd bring their tithe with them. So I assume it was all, you know, sometime in the fall, but, you know, maybe, like I said, early crops or whatever. And they would set up a feast and they would eat some of the stuff that they brought with them. They got to eat some of their tithe. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 14, start in verse 22. You must be certain to tithe all the produce of your seed that comes from the field year after year. So there's your annual tithe, right? In the presence of the Lord your God, in the place he chooses to locate his name. That's because the tent was allowed to move. Okay, so there's no fixed place here and really until the temple. You must eat from the tithe of your grain, your new wine, your olive oil, the firstborn of your herds and flocks, so that you may learn to, what? Revere the Lord. God said, and we're going to come back to this in several weeks again, God said food can be worship. And we all say, amen. Yes, right? Food can be eating together. That aspect of fellowship can also be an act of worship. And God said, when you come together with your tithe, I want you to eat some of it so that you may learn to revere the Lord your God always. And when he blesses you, if the place where he chooses to locate his name is distant, you may convert it to money. We saw that, right? And travel to the place. And then you may spend the money however you wish for cattle, sheep, wine, beer, whatever you desire. You and your household may eat there in the presence of the Lord your God and enjoy it. And you're supposed to eat it. Okay, we'll look at the next couple of verses in a minute, okay? All right, don't jump ahead. So every year you come and part of their worship as they brought their tithe, as they brought it to the storehouse, was to celebrate in a worship for what God had blessed them with that year. They're bringing some animals. They've got this trailer full of stuff, whatever. They're like, look at what God has done this year. Because we have been faithful, he has kept his promise. And it was an act of worship. Isn't that great? Okay. Hold on. For some reason. There was also, in addition to your annual tithe, their annual tithe, there was a triannual tithe. So every 3 years, there was another tithe. Okay. So, and this one was to be kept local. This one wasn't the tithe that went to the Levites in Jerusalem. This is the tithe where you kept it local and you actually had your little party there in your hometown or in your village or with your friends and family. And here we'll stay in Deuteronomy because if we keep going here in chapter 14, as for the Levites, verse 27, as for the Levites in your village, you must not ignore them, for they have no allotment or inheritance along with you. They don't have anything either. At the end of every 3 years, you must bring all the tithe of your produce. In that very year, you must store it up in your villages, not in the temple, not in the place where God is worshiped. Then let the Levites, because don't forget, they have no inheritance. God keeps reminding them. Then the Levites, the resident foreigners, this phrase is used throughout the Old Testament. Resident foreigners would be, today we would use terms like visa holders or green card holders, people who were in the land of Israel, intentionally, legally, working, serving alongside. Okay, there was a very specific term for non-Jewish people, non-Israelites who were in the land. Okay, today again, green cards, visas, whatever, right? Resident foreigners, orphans, and the widows of your villages. That they may come and eat their fill, so that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work you do. So not just sharing with the Levites because of the ministry that they do, not just bringing that to the storehouse of the place of worship every year, but every 3 years you have a little block party, a little village party where everybody gets together and everyone's welcome at the table. Everyone's welcome. You bring stuff or you have nothing to bring, everybody celebrates. And again, it's not because look how awesome we are, look how much money we have, look how rich we are. It's because look how God has blessed our village this year. Because we've been faithful, God has blessed us. And so this is everyone to share. The tithes, whether it was the annual tithe, the triannual, it doesn't matter. The tithes were meant to be an act of worship. They were to be given in love, an act of giving from a heart of love and a heart of gratitude to God. That's why God, and again, he made them. This was a tax. This was not, I don't feel like giving this week. Okay, I don't have enough this week. This is not, weekly direct deposit from my bank account into the church's bank account or whatever. This was everybody sees your field because your field is next to my field, is next to our neighbor's field. Everybody knows our animals. We live in the same village and we're going to do this together because God has blessed not just me, but God has blessed us. And if someone's field is not doing well, it's really obvious that maybe God is withholding blessing on that person or on that family or an entire village, okay? Well, that's exactly how we do things today in the church, right? Doesn't sound anything like, actually, what we do in the church today, and there's a reason for that. That is a couple reasons, actually, because number one, obviously, most of us are not, big farmers or ranchers or whatever. We have, jobs. We're usually paid in money, not wheat or barley, okay? There are definitely still some people that is the case, but just generally speaking for us today. We have been taught, in many cases, if you grew up in church, we have been taught that you don't give annually. You have to give weekly. You have to bring something. You have to put it in churches where the plates are passed around or the little baskets are passed around. You have to put some, or we're going to put boxes on the front. You have to put something in the box, in the bag, in the basket every week. You have to put something, whether it's the blue baskets out here, you have to put something in every week. And I know people who have been taught that, who have been brought up with that, wrestling with the idea, but I get paid twice a month. I don't get paid every week like, a lot of companies used to pay every week, and so that you had your income every week. A lot of companies, a lot of places don't pay every week, right? If you're on a fixed income, you get paid once a month. Okay? How am I supposed to give every week if I only have an income once a month? And they wrestle with this because we've been taught you must give every week. Every time that plate is passed, every time you pass the basket out there, you have to give every week. That's not biblical. It's not in the Bible. It's not there. In fact, as we come into the New Testament, once the church began and that Old Testament law for Israel was ended and Christ fulfilled the law, there's no command to tithe either. In the New Testament, there is no command, not a single command, that we have a tithe, that we have a fixed percentage, a fixed amount, a fixed anything for Christians. That's why we don't get to put the boxes up here. That's why looking at your W-2s doesn't matter. Because there's nothing to go against. Because giving in the New Testament, like the Old Testament, giving in the New Testament, giving in the church, like the Old Testament, is meant to be from a heart of generosity, from a heart of gratitude, from a heart of worship, and a heart of love. That has transferred from the Old Testament to the New Testament. But this fixed amount, this tithe, this 10%, by the way, there were offerings throughout the Old Testament where you could give on top of your mandatory tithe. Lots of offerings that God said, you could offer this, you could offer this. Those are purely voluntary, all up to you. But the tithe is mandatory. The tithe is a tax. God hasn't taxed the church. God has not taxed you as a Christian with a fixed tithe. So, are there reasons to give? Yes. What are they? I want to give you three this morning. I think there are three reasons that the New Testament tells us that, yes, we should still give. It's not a fixed amount. I'm not going to give you a number, not a percentage number, not a fixed number, not a dollar amount. This is your heart of worship to God. Three reasons. Number one, in the New Testament, we give to help support our pastors and teachers. Now, this does sound like the Old Testament Levitical thing, right? Okay, there are definitely some similarities, but similarity is not equality. Just because two things are similar in some ways does not make them the same thing, okay? But the Bible does teach that we should support financially our pastors and teachers. We've seen this recently as we've studied the church this year. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, as we've talked about elders, and elders is synonymous with pastors, chapter 5, verses 17 and 18, 1 Timothy, elders who provide effective leadership must be counted worthy of double honor. Now, earlier in this chapter, honor meant financial compensation for widows who served in the church. Widows who served in the church were taken care of by the church financially. And we've studied that passage in the past. Now, in the exact same chapter, Paul used the exact same word and said elders who provide effective leadership must be counted worthy of double honor. And some people say, well, is that double money? Is that, you know, respect as one honor and financial compensation as a second honor? We're not going to get into all of that. It includes money somehow. It includes remuneration somehow, especially those who work hard at speaking and teaching. Now, if all we had was verse 17, you might think, I don't know if that's a money thing. I mean, definitely pastors should be respected. Remember that. That pastors definitely should be respected, should be honored. I get that. But look at verse 18. Paul quotes two well-known people. Two very well-known people. The first one, in the translation we use here, has a quote from Deuteronomy. That's Moses. That's the Old Testament law. Deuteronomy said, Moses, God gave the law through Moses, do not muzzle an ox while it is treading out the grain. The ox was tied to a millstone. The wheat or the barley or whatever was poured into the millstone. And as the ox walked around this millstone, hour after hour after hour, day after day, grinding this, these you know, wheat kernels or the barley or whatever, people would muzzle the ox so it couldn't eat the food. So it's stomping around all day long, 8, 10, 12 hours a day, providing food for the people, and they were preventing it from eating. And God said, don't do that. You don't muzzle the ox while it is creating the grain. You let it eat what it needs to, what it wants to. You let it eat. And then Paul quoted, this one doesn't look like a quote except for the quotation marks, the worker deserves his pay. Well-known speaker, you've heard of him, by the name of Jesus. Jesus said that, and Paul, I love this, when I teach the doctrine of the Bible and the doctrine of inspiration, where the Bible came from, I love this because that quote shows up in the book of Luke, which means Luke was already written by this point, and Paul was quoting Luke, who was quoting Jesus. We already had the Gospel of Luke by the time Paul wrote 1 Timothy. And Jesus said, the worker deserves his pay. Pastors, teachers, and I'm including teachers in here because Galatians chapter 6, the one who receives instruction in the word must share all good things with the one who teaches it. The fact is that teaching, and teaching well especially, takes time. And much like the Levites and you know, pastors and teachers, you know, we're not Levites, we're not priests or anything. But much like the Levites were to devote their time to the nation of Israel and ministering to their spiritual needs, and God said you should bless them with physical support, the Apostle Paul brought that into the New Testament and said, listen, you've got pastors who work really, really hard on your behalf, and they especially those who work hard at preaching and teaching instruction, you should help them. You should help them, okay? Now, it's a little awkward me saying that because I'm standing right here, right? You know, I get the whole awkward side of these things, okay? But it's biblical. I'm not saying this, you know, because I, you know, want anything. I'm just saying it's biblical, okay? Unlike Levites today, by the way, there are a lot of pastors. I have a lot of pastor friends, a lot of pastor friends across this country and other countries where they serve churches that are even smaller than ours, less generous than ours, and they can't afford to live and feed their family off of what the church can give to them. And so they have to work other jobs, which there's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with that at all. Some, I have pastor friends who prefer, they're like, I'm not going to take an entire salary. I'm not going to take an entire payment from the church because I want that money to be used for other things. I will work another job. It keeps me in the community. You know, it keeps me interacting with other people. And so we call the term bivocational. There's a job, a vocation in the church and a vocation out of the church. And some pastors choose to do that intentionally. Some pastors don't have a choice because the church cannot help them enough to support their families. Because we've seen this year, don't forget, our number one priority as Christians is to take care of our families. We have to provide for our families, and that includes pastors. Pastors, teachers have to provide for their families as well, right? And if they're serving in a church that can't help them do that all the way, then they have to find or take another job or work another job. The Levites didn't have that option. That's why it was a tax. Okay? They didn't have that option. God said, no, you may not have another job. You have to do this completely 100% of the time. Okay? But this is, I've added pastors and teachers because there are probably teachers that you listen to. There may be teachers you listen to maybe on the radio or a podcast or internet channel or something, and you have really, really benefited from their teaching. And I'm talking sound doctrine. You get, you know, false teachers out there. Don't send them money, please. But sound, healthy teaching that has helped you, that has grown you. You know, those ministries cost money too. That takes time as well, and it is perfectly legitimate to send money, to send support to those teaching ministries that have helped you grow. Okay, even if they're not pastors in your local church. You can do that. You can do that. It's perfectly legitimate, okay? If they didn't have money, they wouldn't have been able to produce the radio program and the podcast and the internet channel, and you never would have heard them anyway, right? Because those things cost money. So that's one reason we should give. We should all give. Number two, a second reason we should give is we should give, or we do give, to support missionaries and mission work in our area and around the world. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, it's a little bit longer section, but I think it's worth hearing and reading. Chapter 9, the church in Corinth, the Apostle Paul, so many problems with the church in Corinth. He had to defend his authority as an apostle and all sorts of other things. And here we get a little bit of a look into his relationship with them. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, just starting at verse 1, he said, "Am I not free? Am I not an apostle? Have I not seen Jesus our Lord? Are you not my work in the Lord? If I'm not an apostle to others, at least I am to you." Can you hear a little bit of frustration in his? I don't think I'm just reading that into it. I think that's really there. Okay. "For you are the confirming sign of my apostleship in the Lord. This is my defense to those who examine me." And then he moved on to the topic of finances. Do we not have the right to financial support? Do we not have the right to the company of a believing wife like the other apostles and the Lord's brothers and Cephas, Peter? Or do only Barnabas and I lack the right not to work? All the other apostles don't have to work, but Barnabas and I have to work, right? That's what you're telling me? "Whoever serves in the army at his own expense? Who plants a vineyard and doesn't eat its fruit? Who tends a flock and doesn't consume its milk? Am I saying these things only on the basis of common sense? Because I am. But not only. Or doesn't the law say this as well?" And he quotes the exact same phrase from Moses in Deuteronomy here in 1 Corinthians that he did in 1 Timothy. "It is written in the law of Moses, do not muzzle an ox while it's treading out the grain." God's not concerned about oxen, is he? That's not, is the point about the verse just the animals? Or is he not surely speaking for our benefit? "It was written for us because the one plowing and threshing ought to work in hope of enjoying the harvest." Now, he gets to his point. "If we sowed spiritual blessings among you, is it too much to reap material things from you? If others receive this right from you, are we not more deserving?" Now, we have not made use of this right. Paul said, "I deserve it. I've earned that. That is what you should do. But I did not demand it. I have not accepted it." Because there were a lot of people coming through Corinth at the time pretending to speak for God. We would use the term charlatans. They were fleecing the flock of God. It was all about the money, right? They would come to the city of Corinth and set up their stand and put the 1-800 number on the front so that everyone could donate, right? And it was all about the money. And there were too many people coming through all about the money. So Paul voluntarily, intentionally said, "I'm not going to take your money. I want you to know that the gospel is not for sale. The gospel is not for sale." So I didn't demand it. I didn't make use of this right. We endure everything so that we may not be a hindrance to the gospel of Christ. But the principle is still true. Don't you know that those who serve in the temple eat food from the temple? Those who serve at the altar receive part of the offering? In the same way, the Lord commanded those who proclaim the gospel to receive their living by the gospel. Paul was not a local church pastor. He was an apostle. He traveled all over the place. And he said, "Listen, I deserve, because God said so, it's not because Paul's special, because Jesus said the laborer is worthy of his hire, because God through Moses said, don't muzzle the ox while he is treading out the grain. Missionaries need money. Now, I think it would be best if missionaries could get their support from the people that they are ministering to. That doesn't always work, especially if it's in a new area where there are no Christians at all, right? So we have to support them. We have to send them money. We still support the Konyas in their ministry in Europe. We support the Tubiliers as together. When we give together, we send money to the Tubiliers in Rwanda and some surrounding countries in Africa, East Africa there. Okay, so we're doing part of that, all right? And we should. We should. Another good example of that is TJ, right? TJ's coming back from Brazil. And he's going to be so excited. I'm going to have to give him a time limit. I'm just saying. He absolutely is going to share next week, okay? But he can't be the only one, all right? I'm a little stingy with my time too. So he's going to get to share some of his ministry next week that many of us help support. You helped fund his trip to Brazil. You helped pay for him to be there this last week. The plane tickets and the food and all the other stuff that goes along with it, you helped do that. And that's exactly one of the reasons we're supposed to give. It's exactly one of the reasons we're supposed to give. As I travel and I make my teaching trips, some of you help support that as well. And that is awesome. That is awesome because it's a missions, it's a ministry related thing. By the way, and we don't have any time to go into this at all today, other than just to mention that in Romans chapter 12, Paul says that contributing is actually a spiritual gift. There are some people that God blesses financially and gives them the gift to share it. And their primary ministry is funding God's work. And that's a spiritual gift. And not everyone has that, and that's fine. But if you do, that's from God. He wants you to use it. He entrusts resources to you to fund God's work. All right, the last one. Number three, here's the reason. We give to support other church ministry, not just pastors and teachers, not just missions, but other church ministries, other charity work. Now, 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, this is the passage that is often, the New Testament passage that is often misused for paying your tithes and offerings, you know, because, you know, God loves a cheerful giver and you have to excel in this work. All of those things are true in their context. Okay, here's the context. All the way back in Acts chapter 2 and 3 and 4 and 5, the earliest Christians, the Jewish Christians in Jerusalem, believed in Jesus. And then they were told that Jesus is coming back soon. So they sold all their stuff. So now they have no stuff. They're just sort of living in a commune, living in a little community. And Jesus doesn't come back, and Jesus doesn't come back, and he doesn't come back, and they're running out of stuff because they sold it all. And then there was a famine. And then they used up their stuff, and now there's no more stuff. And because they had believed in Jesus, and they were not following the priests and the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the religious leaders in Jerusalem, they were kicked out of synagogues. And the synagogues is where the social safety net was. The synagogues took care of people. But when you were kicked out of the synagogue, there was no social security. There was no more safety net. So now we have all of these Christians, Jews, in Jerusalem under a famine. They've sold all their stuff, and there's no one willing to help them. And Paul spent a ton of his time as he traveled through the Gentile regions and church to church to church, in addition to preaching the gospel and teaching sound, healthy doctrine, he said, and we're taking a special collection for the saints back in Jerusalem because they're starving. That's the context of 2 Corinthians chapters 8 and 9. In fact, what he told the Corinthians is you pray promised you were going to give to this, and you haven't given a dime. In fact, I told other churches, you won't believe what the Corinthian church promised to give. And they're like, well, if the Corinthians will do it, we can too. And other churches were giving and money, and the Corinthians weren't, and they weren't, and they weren't, and they weren't, weren't. And so Paul wrote chapters 8 and 9 to rebuke them into not just giving because for the sake of giving, but rebuke them into fulfilling their promise to give for the saints in Jerusalem. And so, yeah, you hear in churches sometimes chapters 8 and 9 used to rebuke and guilt people into giving, Christians in churches today. That's not what it was about. It wasn't about tithes. It wasn't about paying anything. It was about fulfilling a promise for a very specific project. When we choose to do things in our church, it's our responsibility to fund them and to do them well. Do you like the lights? Okay, we could just turn off all the lights, right? Lights cost money, right? Some of you aren't here every week and you appreciate that we have a live stream. It costs money. There's equipment, there's internet, and there's stuff back there, and the people who do that for free back there, we appreciate them. Different ministries have different costs. And sometimes, you know, trunk or treat, you're like, that doesn't cost a lot of money. It costs candy, right? And so you use money to buy candy, and we do trunk or treat, right? It's still a cost. Still a cost. VBS, crafts, right? And so many other things, different things cost. We give because we want to do things. We give because we want to do things. We give because we want to have things, okay? Some of you right now, I'm gonna elephant in the room, you are freezing, right? Absolutely, right now you are freezing. Others of you are like, where'd the air go? Where'd the air go? It turned off. Why is it so hot in here, okay? It doesn't matter which side of that you fall. I really don't care. Okay? I'm hot every day at the end of a Sunday. I am roasting no matter what I wear. You know, it doesn't matter. Okay? Just because, you know, I'm up here. So it doesn't, I don't care what you think. I don't care what you think. Okay? Either way, whether it's air conditioning in the summer or heat in the winter or whatever, we like it. We try to find a nice balance that ticks everybody off. But it costs money. It costs money, right? If we want something, if we want to do something, if we want to have something, it costs. And so we give because of that. We have stick around Sundays. We'll be announcing another stick around Sunday here in a few weeks. Not talking about it right now. We actually get to bring part of our tithe. when we say the church is providing the main meat, you know what that is? That's money that you've given. It's sitting in the bank account that we're spending on the main part. And you still bring sides and food and other stuff so that we can fellowship together. We give. We give. Here's one more thought. Just wanted to give our challenge and then we'll wrap up. If it's possible, and I want to point to Galatians chapter 6, verse 10 here. So then whenever we have opportunity, okay, it doesn't necessarily say, Paul didn't say necessarily create opportunities, but when you have opportunities, let's do good for all people, to all people, especially to those who belong to the family of faith. Now, let me throw out an idea. Some of you already do this. You do it very, very well, and nobody knows about it, which is how we know you're doing it very, very well. Some of you have never thought of this before. Maybe some of you are like, I just can't right now, but I'd love to. If you have space, if you have a place in your budget or in your income or however you do it, maybe put a little bit aside just to give when there's an opportunity. Some people do this. They just keep a little bit of cash folded up, rolled up, nobody's gonna find it, tucked in their wallet, tucked into their purse, just in case an opportunity comes up. And I know we have to be careful. There's all sorts of people that are ready and willing to separate you from your money, right? Okay, not every sad story is a legitimate giving opportunity. I get that. We need the wisdom and discernment and all that. But some people love nothing better. Maybe they have the gift of contributions. Maybe they're just mature, growing, generous people. And they keep a little bit of cash tucked away so that when they see a real need, they can say, I can help with that. Very quietly. Very quietly. Not a big thing. Nobody knows. Just them and God. Maybe there's a line in your budget and you just keep some money in a savings account somewhere. You never touch it except when something comes up. Maybe you have a missionary friend. Maybe you hear about something. It's like, hey, there's a need. Maybe it's something that we bring and say, hey, one of the missionary agencies that we're connected with here, we don't support them regularly, but there's a need. You say, I've been saving for just such a need, and I want to be able to give to that. We give because God wants us to be givers. And that's really the challenge here. That's really the challenge as we wrap up this morning. Remember, we're just managers. We're just managers of God's stuff. This is not our stuff. He has given it to us. He's blessed us with it. And sometimes he blesses us with more than other times. And some people have more than other people. It's not a competition. It's not about that. Okay? We are managers of God's stuff. It doesn't matter how much we have. He wants us to manage it well in this world for his work. Whether it's Bible teachers and pastors, whether it's missionaries, whether it's ministry toward believers, whether it's ministry of evangelism toward unbelievers, however, whenever you have opportunity, whenever you see a need, and here's the thing to remember as we say this and then we'll close in prayer. God is a generous God. In fact, the word that we usually translate grace in our New Testaments, if you take that out of the New Testament and go back into ancient Greek and get rid of all the religious aspect behind it, that Greek word actually means generous. So when we say God is a gracious God, what we're saying is he is a generous God. Generosity is not just something that he does, it's who he is. And if we are becoming more and more and more like God, as we come to know him better and love him more, as we become like him, as we mature in our faith, we should be becoming generous people, just like God is, right? That's why we give. Not because we owe a tithe, not because someone is keeping track, not because it was commanded by law, but because we have a generous God and he wants us to become generous people and fund his work in this church, in this area, and all over the world. That's why we give. And whether you give on a Sunday morning here in the little blue baskets out there, whether you give online, whether you give, writing a check or whatever, doesn't matter. Giving is about a heart thing. Giving is from our hearts. Love for God. We give to God. It's an act of worship. We don't give to the church. We give through the church. To God, through the church, through these other ministries. As worship and gratitude to our God.